Liberty, New York. This is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Two Creek Farm owner Brent Habig shares his thoughts and aspirations on the 2023 Farm Bill. Two Creek Farm practices are regenerative. They prioritize animal welfare and ecology to mitigate climate change. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Today marks the fourth day in a row that Kamala Harris and Donald Trump will be campaigning in the same state. The two will be in North Carolina today, Harris in Charlotte, and Trump in Gastonia, and then Greensboro later in the evening. They each rallied supporters in the Milwaukee area last night. Housing costs are a top concern for many voters. NPR's Laurel Walmsley reports that Trump and Harris have proposed different ideas for addressing the country's housing problems.
Harris and Trump agree on a few ideas to bring down housing costs, including building more homes, cutting red tape, and opening up some public lands for housing. Harris is calling for 3 million new homes and tax credits that would encourage building more affordable apartments and starter homes. She also wants to give $25,000 in down payment assistance to first-time homebuyers who qualify, though economists warn that those payments could push some home prices higher. Trump, meanwhile, says he will slash inflation to bring down mortgage rates. Many economists, though, say his proposals would drive inflation higher. Laurel Walmsley, NPR News, Washington.
U.S. intelligence officials say a video that purports to show election fraud in Georgia is fake and the work of what they call Russian influence actors. The video shows a man claiming to be a Haitian immigrant talking about voting multiple times. A dual U.S.-Russian national who lives in New Jersey has pleaded guilty to acquiring sensitive dual-use electronics for Russia's military and spy services. The case is part of the Justice Department's efforts to target individuals illegally supporting Russia's war on Ukraine. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
Vadim Yermolenko pleaded guilty to multiple criminal counts, including conspiracy to violate U.S. export controls and conspiracy to commit bank fraud. According to court papers, Yermolenko worked with a network of individuals under the direction of Russia's intelligence services to obtain advanced electronic components for Russia's military. U.S. officials say some of the components Yermolenko helped acquire can be used in the development of nuclear and hypersonic weapons, as well as quantum computing. He faces up to 30 years in prison. The case was coordinated by a Justice Department task force focused on enforcing sweeping U.S. sanctions on Russia following the Kremlin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
A federal jury last night delivered the first conviction of a Louisville, Kentucky police officer who was involved in the raid that killed Breonna Taylor. Her mother, Tamika Palmer, spoke outside the courthouse after the jury convicted Brett Hankison of violating Taylor's civil rights by using excessive force.
I'm grateful to God. It took a lot of patience. It took a lot of time. 1,694 days.
Hankison faces a maximum sentence of life in prison. He'll be sentenced in March. The same jury acquitted Hankison of violating the civil rights of three neighbors who lived in an adjacent apartment that sustained gunfire. You're listening to NPR News.
This is Radio Catskill. Tuesday is Election Day. In New York, polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. In Pennsylvania, polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. All completed mail ballots must be received by Pennsylvania County election offices by the time polls close. A postmark by that time is not sufficient. Listen to Radio Catskill for local and national election news on election night and in the following days. Radio Catskill, keeping you connected this election season.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Two Creek farm owner Brent Habig shares his thoughts and aspirations on the 2023 Farm Bill. Located in Lakewood, Pennsylvania, Two Creek Farm practices are regenerative, prioritizing animal welfare and ecology to mitigate climate change. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country.
Farming Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The moon will drift by the two inferior planets to Earth this week. As it does so, it will be in conjunction with each of them. An inferior planet is a planet whose orbit lies between the Sun and Earth's orbit in the solar system. Tonight, the waxing crescent moon will pass within 4 degrees to the south of Mercury. Mercury is usually difficult to see in the sky. As the closest planet to the Sun, Mercury never strays very far from the Sun and is always found low on the horizon, around sunrise or sunset. Unfortunately for our viewing area, the conjunction will not be visible. Mercury and the Moon will reach their highest point in the sky during the daytime hours and will set 15 minutes after the Sun. Then on Monday, the Moon will come to about 3 degrees to the south of Venus. Unlike tomorrow night's conjunction with Mercury, the Moon's conjunction with Venus will be visible. The two bodies will be visible low on the southwestern horizon starting just before sunset and will remain visible for 45 minutes after sundown. With the Moon and Venus being near each other, the difference in brightness between the two will stand out. Venus will be shining at a magnitude -4, and the thin sliver of the Moon will be at a magnitude -7.4. The brightness scale is logarithmic rather than linear, which means the Moon will be 23 times as bright as Venus. The Moon will be in conjunction with Mercury tonight and Venus on Monday. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Let's shift our focus now from the celestial to the terrestrial. Northeast Pennsylvania farmer Brent Habig has been a guest on Radio Catskill's Farm and Country several times. In past summers, I have attended his educational pasture walks on location in Lakewood, Pennsylvania. On those afternoon tours at Two Creek Regenerative Farm, participants have the opportunities to observe no-till garden practices built from carbon-rich living soils. It's a chance to comprehend silvopasture techniques that integrate trees into grazing systems and watch farm animals humanely foraging in the woods or feeding on nutrient-dense food in diverse pastures. I invited Two Creek farm owner Brent Habig into our Honesdale radio studios inside the Cooperage building at 1030 Main Street. Our conversation included his recent experience in Washington, D.C., addressing some legislature in the 2023 Farm Bill. The 2023 Farm Bill is expected to be signed into law within the next few months. Our comprehensive conversation included the topic of the EATS Act, which is short for Ending Agricultural Trade Suppression. The EATS Act addresses higher animal protection standards.
A group called Americans for Family Farms has been active in lobbying for the Farm Bill to better support small and medium scale U.S. farmers. And I had participated in some letter writing with them. I had organized a fly-in for farmers throughout the United States. So I was invited to participate in that fly-in. So that fly-in had about 30 to 40 participating farmers, and we met with a whole set of either congressional or Senate offices, mainly their ag staff, to discuss our perspectives on the farm bill and to debate what was in fact in the best interests of small family farms within each state. So we had a whole set of meetings. I met with three or four of the congresspeople on the PA side, and as well as senators. I met with Fetterman's office. We did not meet with Senator Casey's office. We were focused on what they call the EATS Act. It's a pretty dramatic acronym. It's called Ending Agricultural Trade Suppression. And this is a provision that has been written in to the farm bill that has been approved by the House Ag Committee. And the EATS Act essentially takes away states' powers to govern their own agricultural policies. And this was something that, as small farmers, we were vehemently opposing. So the context for that actually had to do with pigs and hog farming. And it all started in California, where California had a referendum on whether or not hog farmers could be caged during gestation or during the period of pregnancy. And they would be caged in most industrial pork farms in a way that they're unable to turn around for the entire period that they're pregnant, which is just very difficult animal welfare. So California had voted by referendum to prohibit that for any pork produced in California or sold into California. And that was overwhelmingly voted for by the California citizens, that they did not want gestation crates in California pork. But that was very unattractive to big pork producers that just want to sell whatever they want into California. That went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld the decision in California. And now that's become the EATS Act that's in the House version of the Farm Bill, where they're basically trying to overturn what California had done to advance animal welfare. And they're taking that a step further and saying no state can determine its own agricultural trade policies. So no state could set standards about what agricultural products would be allowed into that state. Now, we feel as small farmers that's very bad for us, because there's a lot of niche market opportunities, and we want states to have the full authority to support farmers within their own states. And if everything is determined federally, we don't think that that's good for small farmers. But it is good for big business, because if the EATS Act is passed, then basically, Big Ag really only needs to lobby in Washington. They don't have to worry about states. But in any case, I know it's a lot of detail there, but the bottom line is we were trying to support states' rights to be able to determine their own agricultural policies, which is really important to promoting local food throughout the U.S.
It makes sense, doesn't it? Because each state has a different geography, a different climate, different consumption.
So from a farmer perspective, it was very obvious to all of us that this was not helpful. The other side of this argument is Big Ag, Big Pork. They want to be able to sell into every state without worrying about any state-specific legislation that complicates their production, sales, or marketing. It's national or global pork producers. This is a complicating factor to their business. But most small farmers are selling locally anyway. And things like Prop 12 in California, Massachusetts has similar legislation also voted by referendum. It's called Question 3. The identical thing in Massachusetts, and states being able to advance policies that promote not only local farmers, but also animal welfare standards that their populations believe should be the basis for our agricultural law. I don't see any benefit to taking that away, aside from the big producers that just want to be able to basically sell into any state with these. So if this were to pass, what it means is that basically all that the big ag or four major pork producers that dominate the market, they don't have to worry about states anymore. They just have to capture Washington, and then they have the policies they want. For us, Pennsylvania has its own farm bill. Pennsylvania has a program called PA Preferred. If the EATS Act were passed, the implications for the farm bill or PA Preferred are anywhere from murky to extremely negative. It's unclear sort of what Pennsylvania's authority is to determine a lot of its own agricultural policies. So again, for us, for myself as a Pennsylvania hog farm, we're a diversified farm, but hogs is a part of our farming. We want to be able to work in a state where small farming in general is working well. Pennsylvania has one of the most healthy local food systems of any state anywhere. We don't want that to be in any way complicated by Pennsylvania's ability to determine its own agricultural policies. And it's the same for New York, or you fill in the blanks. As you're saying, each state is very, very different, and their ability to set their own standards, determine their own policies, I think is very important for small farmers within those states.
In relation to the 2023 Farm Bill that we're still waiting to pass, and chances are it's the election that's holding it up, and it eventually will pass. As a small farmer in Pennsylvania, what is your aspiration and your anticipation? What would you like to see in the Farm Bill pass for farmers like yourself?
Well, I think our food system and our agricultural system are in many ways broken. We see that through the contribution of our agricultural system to climate change. We see that through the failure of so many American farms, so many going out of business. We also see that at the food system more broadly through the health challenges that so many Americans face that relate to a diet of highly processed foods, which is a direct product of how we promote agriculture within the Farm Bill. So I think there's much about the agricultural system and the food system that needs to change. And I would love the new Farm Bill to lean in on helping pave the way and support the difficult transitions that are needed for a better agricultural system and a better food system. We do have provisions in the Farm Bill that promote conservation, that promote also education. And I think if those elements of the Farm Bill were expanded, I think that would be great. Many small farmers do benefit from those to a small degree, but there's a lot more muscle that could be put behind conservation and transitioning from agricultural production that's fundamentally degenerating to agricultural production that's regenerating. There's a lot more that the Farm Bill could do to support that. I would like to see the Farm Bill unwind its support for commodities, which basically is allowing farmers, predominantly Midwestern farmers, to grow corn and soy with a variety of support available in a way that produces those substrates to industrial food at a very low cost and is the foundation then for a food system that is not the best food system that we could have for human health. So I think if the Farm Bill reduced or eliminated support to corn and soy farmers, most of which in the end just benefits the big ag businesses, whether that's the seed companies, the agrochemical companies, the tractor companies, they're the ones really benefiting from all that support. I don't think the farmers are winning in the end. They're just surviving. I think if that support went away, that could allow our agricultural system to transition more rapidly towards healthy food that I think is ultimately better for all of our diets as American consumers.
Now, you mentioned you'd like to see some changes with conservation and education. Could you give us a couple of examples of what you'd like to see?
Well, I think extending what is already happening, the NRCS is a component of funding under the Farm Bill. I think it's the Natural Resource Conservation Service. They have funding that supports agricultural investments that would be more regenerative or more supportive of ecosystem benefits in farming. So, for example, if we have to run our cattle, and then we might be able to get some support for fencing that might keep our cattle out of streams and promote cleaner water, and then maybe get some funding for an alternative water system so we don't have to have cattle running through streams. They might also have funding to support smaller paddock fencing so that farmers can rotate their animal grazing more rapidly and more efficiently. Many of us benefit from NRCS funds that support installing high tunnels that allow us to put some of our production indoors and extend growing seasons. Certainly more funding like that. And then on the education front, helping farmers learn more about regenerative practices, about how to shift from set stocking to rotational grazing or, you know, any type of managed grazing. There's a lot of knowledge and mindset changes that are involved in that, and certainly education would be helpful. Silvopasture as well, getting trees within grazing systems, has incredible environmental benefits, but people need to learn how to do that. That takes capital investment for that to happen. So it'd be great if the Farm Bill were supporting farmers in transitioning efforts like those.
You're listening to Farm and Country on Radio Catskill. We're sharing a conversation with Two Creek Farm owner Brent Habig, who offers rainbow eggs at markets and so much more.
Well, we're changing the seasons here, and we can ease into another poultry that I know you raise. It's turkeys. I've had your turkey. It's just amazing. And I've watched them grazing and fluttering around. They're beautiful animals to watch, and the system that you have. Let's talk about that, because it's time to talk turkey.
Yeah, we enjoy raising turkeys seasonally each year. We raise between 200 and 300, and they're all raised on pasture. They are certified organic. We have them out in a field, and we're moving them twice a week. We have had really good success with the product. They are, as you say, true grazers. They really do remove grass in a way that is very beneficial to our pastures. I would say they're maybe one of the best ways to rapidly improve pasture, because they eat more thoroughly than our cattle and sheep, and their manure is more beneficial than from cattle and sheep. So they're very helpful for us ecologically, and it is a delicious product. We have them available on pre-order. We usually sell out before Thanksgiving. So we have two heritage breeds. We have White Hollands, and we also have a bronze breed that is, you know, that looks more like a wild turkey in coloration. And so we like supporting heritage breeds in our production, but they are broad-breasted, so it's a nice bird from an eating perspective. And yeah, so they're available on pre-order either through our website, which is twocreek.net. We also have a whole set of local retail partners, including Joe Robb's right here in Honesdale, Proper to Go in Narrowsburg. We partner with Arlington Meats in Lake Ariel, And we also partner with Main Street Farm and Livingston Manor. So you can go and put an order through any of those, or you can put an order for us online, and then they'll be ready for pickup the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Of the two breeds you just spoke of, you said one of them is more like a wilder turkey. Does that mean the meat, it's leaner, or the bird is smaller? Describe physically, because I think the time I had it was the first bird that you talked about.
I think it, the coloration of the feathers is different, but I think the shape of the bird is in the end quite similar across both breeds. If you had a wild turkey, that would have a different flavor, and we have raised wild turkeys. The wilder the turkeys get, the harder they are to raise, because they go feral, and they'll fly anywhere. You have to clip their wings. We don't like to clip wings. They'll fly, and we've had certain breeds that have just gone and run off and went living with the wild turkeys. So we do like broad-breasted, because as they get larger, they lose some of that flying capacity, but they're still very healthy, active birds. They live great lives, and from a flavor perspective, I don't think there's going to be a difference from one to the other. It's just the look. One's going to be white with a little black dot on the chest, and the other's going to look like a wild turkey in coloration, but the actual meat will be more like the whites that we raise. And these are very different from an industrial turkey you're getting at the grocery store. First of all, just from an animal welfare standpoint, these are birds living outdoors. They're socializing. They're enjoying life. There's no comparison animal welfare. From a diet perspective, they have a lot of a heavy wild forage component to their diet, whether that's grass, insects, whatever that may be, whereas an industrial turkey would be grown indoors. And then the actual flavor of the turkey on the table, industrial ones are going to have a little less fat. They're going to be drier, harder to cook. The turkeys that we raise are much more forgiving, much more moist. They're also not injected with water to pump up their weight. So just a real wonderful eating experience. And I think for families, you know, when you think about Thanksgiving, we want to support something good in the world and show our gratitude. Showing your gratitude through an industrial purchased turkey that's been miserable its whole life is very different than showing and experiencing gratitude by supporting local farmers and enjoying a bird that's lived a good life, that's going to taste better and be better on the table. Our turkeys are very popular, I think, for these reasons. We've always sold out a week or more before Thanksgiving, so if anyone's interested, certainly get the deposits in.
That was Two Creek Farm owner Brent Habig speaking on the issues of the 2023 Farm Bill. Two Creek Farm practices highlight regenerative agriculture, which restores our ecosystem by emulating nature. If you want to talk real organic, local turkey with Two Creek Farm, you'll find them inside the Hawley's Farmers Market at the Hawley Hub on Main Street every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. and at the Cooperage Main Street Market Saturdays 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. More information is available online at twocreek.net. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Saar. Special thanks goes to our guest, Brent Habig, owner of Two Creek Farm, located in Lakewood, Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen to us on air, your smartphone or smart speaker, and online at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union.